This is The Guardian.
Today, the whistleblower who shook Facebook to its core.
Hundreds of millions of people around the world using some of the most popular social media sites have been forced offline in a major global blackout.
You might say it's been a tricky few days for Mark Zuckerberg.
So on Monday, Facebook's platforms, that's Facebook, Facebook Messenger, Instagram, obviously, WhatsApp, went down through basically a giant operational problem.
It's one of the longest outages, already lasting several hours, and Facebook's share price has plummeted by nearly 5%.
And this affected billions of people, whether it's conservative MPs plotting on WhatsApp in Manchester, to people just chatting to their relatives on Facebook, to obviously people scrolling through their Instagram feed.
Guys, I'm filming this video for my phone. I don't know what the hell's going on right now.
Instagram, stop playing with me. Give me my content.
No, it's not just your internet. Users of Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram have been facing worldwide shutdowns.
It was a massive outage. It drew millions of complaints, nightmarish news headlines, and it affected 3.5 billion people. And it still wasn't the worst thing to happen to Facebook this week.
Facebook has been the subject of, over the past few weeks, a series of damning revelations in the Wall Street Journal called the Facebook Files, which cover everything from changes in Facebook's algorithm allegedly inciting more sort of divisive content to Instagram being damaging for teen mental health.
At first, the whistleblower behind all that stayed anonymous. But now she's come forward.
My name is Frances Haugen. I used to work at Facebook. I joined Facebook because I think Facebook has the potential to bring out the best in us. But I'm here today because I believe Facebook's products harm children, stoke division, and weaken our democracy.
In testimony to US senators this week, she set out a critique of how Facebook does business that goes to the very heart of how it operates, that some say puts it in the same league of corporate villains as big tobacco, and might even threaten its existence.
Basically, what these revelations have done, these documents, Haugen's testimony have done, is sort of crystallized in one place a series of concerns that have been circulating for years.
From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, Facebook's nightmare week and what it means for its future.
According to documents leaked to the Wall Street Journal, Facebook's own research shows its photo sharing platform is damaging to the mental health of teenagers, especially young girls.
Dan Norma, you're The Guardian's global technology editor, and you've been tracking a pretty explosive set of leaks about the inner workings of Facebook since they first emerged about a month ago.
The complaints say Facebook's own research shows that it amplifies hate, misinformation and political unrest.
Just how big a deal were they, and has Facebook ever had a leak on this scale before?
There certainly have been signs and reports of internal dissent at Facebook over the years, but never from a single source and in such damning volume across such a wide array of subjects. Perhaps most importantly, not in a way that had cut through. So that is particularly where I think Facebook finds itself in a very difficult place.
When you first saw the leaks come out, what did you think about the whistleblower behind them? What was your instinct about what would have motivated them?
My instinct was that clearly you just trust the documents. They're objective pieces of evidence, and you could tell from them that whoever had leaked them was juxtaposing these essentially private documents or just company-only documents with the public face of Facebook.
The findings reportedly show the social media giant not only knew about some of the issues being reported by users, especially teenage girls, but it played these issues down in the public.
It was a very concerted and broad attempt to show that on multiple levels, Facebook wasn't practicing what it preaches. So you could tell that this came from a place of principle.
So for the first few weeks, we didn't know who the source was.
Tell us if there's any new information your team was able to glean from this whistleblower.
What we know is that the whistleblower has worked inside Facebook. They have documents.
What did happen next in those intervening weeks?
This sort of drip of revelations sort of culminated on Sunday night.
Her name is Frances Haugen. That is a fact that Facebook has been anxious to know since last month.
Frances Haugen, a 37-year-old former Facebook employee who left the company only in May, coming forward as being the source of these damaging revelations.
When and how did it occur to you to take all of these documents out of the company?
At some point in 2021, I realized, okay, I'm going to have to do this in a systemic way, and I have to get out enough that no one can question that this is real.
Frances Haugen stepped forward in two regards. She did an on-the-record interview with the Wall Street Journal.
The thing I saw at Facebook over and over again was there were conflicts of interest between what was good for the public and what was good for Facebook. And Facebook over and over again chose to optimize for its own interests, like making more money.
She also did a sit-down TV interview with the sort of flagship U.S. News program, 60 Minutes. So that was probably the big reveal where she explained why she did what she did.
And so what did you learn about Frances Haugen in these interviews? Who is she? What job did she do? Where did she come from?
She's got a very interesting background. She's a very successful tech professional. She worked for Google, Pinterest. Indeed, Google paid for her to do a master's in business administration at Harvard. But shortly after that, she became ill and her family hired a family acquaintance to look after her, a young man who very quickly, while looking after Frances, became radicalized online, falling down a sort of rabbit hole of dark conspiracy theories. He subsequently abandoned those theories and is in, I don't know how you put it, intellectual recovery now. But Frances said that shook her belief in social media. And so when Facebook approached her for a job in 2018, she said, look, I'll join you, but I really want to look at misinformation because of what it did to this friendship. The friendship never recovered.
I never wanted anyone to feel the pain that I had felt. And I had seen how high the stakes were in terms of making sure there was high quality information on Facebook.
That's how she ended up working for what is basically Facebook's election integrity team. And what you've got is someone with very strong beliefs in making good some of the wrongs that social media seems to be committing, going to the big player in this world and becoming very disappointed in what she saw and taking action, very public action now, to remedy that.
We're going to come on to Frances Haugen's testimony and what kind of impact it had. But can we first talk about how does Facebook make money?
Facebook makes money by essentially taking your data and selling it to advertisers.
So how do you sustain a business model in which users don't pay for your service?
Senator, we run ads.
Advertisers push adverts to you based on knowing exactly who you are, what you do and what you like to buy.
And people often refer to Facebook's algorithm as if it's some kind of magic spell. What exactly is it and how crucial is it to the company's business model?
I suppose the best way to describe an algorithm is it's just a series of steps that a program or an app takes to sort of tailor your experience. It sort of guides you down various options when there's thousands of options for what you could do on Facebook, particularly with regard to what your newsfeed shows you. An algorithm tailors that for you.
So you talked about some of those allegations or some of those revelations. We'll talk about them in a bit more detail now. Starting with Instagram, lots of us will have heard about the way scrolling through so many pictures of other people's fabulous lives can impact our well-being. And there have been particular worries about the impact it has on teenagers and young people. What did this leak tell us about what Facebook was saying privately?
The leak showed that Facebook, Instagram have been doing quite a significant amount of research on the issues of teenage mental health and well-being in general, but also specifically in terms of their interaction with Instagram. It does show through surveys, for instance, of Instagram users, that a significant number of people in these surveys were affected in terms of body image, in terms of self-confidence.
And what's super tragic is Facebook's own research says, as these young women begin to consume this eating disorder content, they get more and more depressed, and it actually makes them use the app more. And so they end up in this feedback cycle where they hate their bodies more and more.
The research was so detailed that you're left wondering, why didn't Facebook sort of flag this publicly with users and say, look, we've discovered this and these are some steps that you can take.
We're joined now by a company executive, Monica Bickert. She's the vice president of content policy at Facebook.
One of the controversies from Frances Haugen's revelations is that on Instagram, the algorithm tailored, it pushed certain users towards extreme dieting content and stuff that's obviously incredibly damaging for anyone's mental health, but particularly teenage girls.
What do you do about that?
Well, thanks for pointing out that we are doing this research, because, you know, that's something that I hope people will understand. If we were a company who didn't care about safety, if we were about trying to prioritize profit over safety, we wouldn't do this kind of research.
Obviously, it's not surprising that a lot of people are appalled by that. But there were other really major stories to come out of the leak. What did Haugen say about how the Facebook algorithm affected the kind of political content, maybe divisive content, that people see on their feeds?
On Facebook, she alleged that in 2018, this amendment to the newsfeed algorithm, which is the sort of central experience for Facebook users, pushed people towards more divisive content.
Yes. Facebook has realized that if they change the algorithm to be safer, people will spend less time on the site, they'll click on less ads, they'll make less money.
Haugen says political parties in Europe actually got in touch with Facebook saying the only way that we can grab voters' attention is by putting out quite divisive, nasty stuff. Can you please tell us what's going on?
Absolutely, people are angry. And you can feel it. You can feel the rage, the madness.
And we now know that the last US election and the January 6th insurrection that followed is a huge example of that. What did she say about how Facebook handled political misinformation in the US specifically?
Before the 2020 election, Facebook had in place this civic integrity unit, which was there to prevent misinformation sowing discord amongst voters and making sure that there was a sort of as stable as possible a political process in the 2020 election.
They told us we're dissolving civic integrity. Like, they basically said, oh, good, we made it through the election. There wasn't riots. We can get rid of civic integrity now.
What Frances Haugen revealed was, number one, that the civic integrity teams broken up too soon after the election, and that misinformation safeguards that Facebook had implemented on its platform were rolled back too soon after the 2020 election, and that that contributed to the 6th of January riots.
USA! USA! USA!
The whistleblower Channel 60 Minutes is going to accuse Facebook of contributing to the January 6th riot. Your response?
I think if the assertion is that January the 6th can be explained because of social media, I just think that's ludicrous. The responsibility for the violence of January the 6th and the insurrection on that day lies squarely with the people who inflicted the violence and those who encouraged them.
And there's one other huge headline that emerged from this leak, and that was about how Facebook treated high-profile accounts differently to everybody else. Can you explain how that worked?
According to these leaks, Facebook had a sort of whitelisting policy where it basically didn't apply moderating rules to certain high-profile figures. And in one example that was pretty damning, Neymar, the Brazilian footballer, was allowed to publish images of someone who had accused him of rape, and he was allowed to stay on the platform, and also those images were kept up for longer than necessary.
It's worth noting that Neymar was cleared in that case due to a lack of evidence. But there's been so much in these disclosures, Dan. Is there anything else that stood out to you?
The vehemence of some of the Facebook responses. Facebook's initial response to the revelations was that they mischaracterized the research with regard to the Instagram work.
You know, what I can tell you is that the stolen documents have been often taken out of context, but we stand by our public statements. We're ready to answer questions.
They said that, you know, social discord existed for decades before Facebook came into existence.
I think it gives people false comforts to assume that there must be a technological or a technical explanation.
The fact that Facebook has been pretty much on the attack over this showed that there's obviously a strategic decision within the company in terms of how it deals with this to be on the front foot.
Thank you, Senator, for your question. I'd like to speak specifically to this as an experienced mom of a teenage daughter, as someone who was a teenage girl herself.
In Washington, a U.S. Senate committee called forward last week Antigone Davis, the head of global safety at Facebook, and gave her a grilling about these revelations that was pretty uncomfortable for Antigone Davis, but also, I think, very uncomfortable for Facebook.
Well, if I may interrupt you, Ms. Davis, these are your own reports. These findings are from your own studies and your own experts. You can speak from your own experience, but will you disclose all of the reports, all of the findings?
It wasn't a good look simply because the senators were so fired up and were pretty cutting about a lot of the answers that they received.
So after that very difficult moment for Facebook, Frances Haugen spoke to US senators herself. It was a huge moment for her and for the company. How did she come across?
Frances Haugen came across throughout as very credible because she obviously has quite deep knowledge of the tech industry and Facebook from working there, and also very methodical. She gave very concise, detailed and interesting answers. The opening testimony to senators contained headlines, basically, that sort of rang out around the world. The key one was obviously Facebook putting astronomical profits before people.
The company's leadership knows how to make Facebook and Instagram safer, but won't make the necessary changes because they have put their astronomical profits before people.
Facebook made a net income, or that's a US version, a profit of $30 billion last year. That accusation is going to stick.
Facebook understands that if they want to continue to grow, they have to find new users.
She referred repeatedly, because this was also the focus of the hearing, to the fact that Facebook is keen to hook teenagers and young people onto its platforms because they haven't made informed choices about what they're going to buy in the future and therefore are a prime target for advertisers. She came back to that again and again.
They have to make sure that the next generation is just as engaged with Instagram as the current one. And the way they'll do that is by making sure that children establish habits before they have good self-regulation.
By hooking kids.
She referred repeatedly to the issue of trust, i.e. anything Facebook has said before and after this hearing should not be trusted until they work hard to regain that trust.
The company intentionally hides vital information from the public, from the US government, and from governments around the world.
She also talked about where the responsibility for all of this ultimately lies. Can you tell me a bit about that, what she said?
She said that the buck stops with Mark Zuckerberg, the founder and chief executive. She said that it's on him to make the changes that are necessary, and said in her testimony that sometimes he was given soft options, was the phrase she used, to make Facebook a less divisive platform, and chose not to take them.
What did the senators questioning her have to say? Did you get the impression that they largely agreed with her criticisms of Facebook?
The US Senate hearing has a lot of grandstanding speeches from the senators at the beginning of the hearing.
Teens today, looking at themselves in the mirror, feel doubt and insecurity.
Richard Blumenthal, the chair of this subcommittee, has made very clear that he doesn't trust Facebook.
Mark Zuckerberg ought to be looking at himself in the mirror today. And yet, rather than taking responsibility and showing leadership, Mr. Zuckerberg is going sailing.
Senator Ed Markey referred to Frances Haugen as a 21st century American hero.
Century American hero, warning our country of the danger for young people, for our democracy, and our nation owes you.
Previously, we've had big whistleblowers in analog fields like big tobacco. Frances Haugen, her appearance and her testimony and the leaks that she's made to the Wall Street Journal are going to be remembered for a long time.
Just a huge debt of gratitude for the courage you're showing here today, so thank you.
In terms of the makeup of the Senate committee, it's got people like Ted Cruz on it, who is not a soft Republican, as we know, on many matters, but he was united with Democrat members on this committee in anger at Facebook.
Wow.
Indeed, I was talking to someone with a lot of experience in Silicon Valley, someone who's sort of been there for decades and has close relationships with a lot of senior people there. And this person just told me, Facebook has no friends.
Looking at this and reading it on the outside, it sort of makes you wince and you wonder, God, inside Facebook, they must be sort of biting their fists. But what did Facebook itself actually say in response to Haugen's evidence?
Mark Zuckerberg put up a blog post on Tuesday night addressed to Facebook staff, but obviously to the wider public, stating that this overarching claim that Facebook puts astronomical profits over safety is just not true, and that Facebook puts more effort into monitoring and safety than any other analogous company in the world. Facebook has given a sort of blow-by-blow rebuttal to her testimony. The overall tone and implication of what Facebook is saying is that why would we do this research? We do it because we care and we do act on it. It's there to guide our actions. A key response to that would be, look, well, Facebook's research did find problems. Haugen is saying that repeatedly Facebook has failed to act upon those.
What did Facebook have to say specifically about Haugen and her credibility?
Facebook put out communications via Twitter and official statements on Tuesday saying that Haugen did not work on some of the projects that she's referring to. The issue for Facebook is that it's not so much where she worked in Facebook, it's the fact that she revealed tens of thousands of documents that did quote people who worked on these projects. She's put a very human face on the internal problems at Facebook. She's put a very human face on people's many concerns about Facebook that have been uttered over the years, and she comes across as a person of integrity. So taking a hard line on her is, I doubt, going to work.
Facebook are probably hoping this will all just be over really soon. It can just, you know, just brush it to the side. But do you think Haugen has more to say?
Haugen definitely has more to say. She'll be appearing in front of the Joint Committee of MPs and Peers scrutinising the UK's online safety bill, or the draft version of it, this month. What she says there will be interesting, because I would imagine she'll refer to some UK-specific issues with online hate and disinformation. She will also be appearing, I would imagine, at various political committees around the world.
Coming up, what Mark Zuckerberg can do to resolve Facebook's crisis. So Dan, you've told us about Haugen's bombshell testimony to Congress this week. What kind of an impact could what she said have on Facebook users?
In terms of public perception, Facebook and its platform still have billions of users. I don't think that's materially changed overnight. I think certainly the Instagram revelations will have cut through. A concern within Facebook has got to be, particularly with regard to Instagram, that it needs to gain more young users. It needs to win the social media competition, which is a constantly ongoing thing against the likes of TikTok, YouTube.
Former Facebook employee wound 60 Minutes last night and blew the whistle about the horrible things Facebook is doing to society.
So family, friends, today is day one. I give up social media. I quit Facebook.
These revelations probably won't help in terms of convincing younger users to join Facebook or sign up to Instagram.
Many of these criticisms do seem to come back to one man, which is Facebook's founder, Mark Zuckerberg. How much power does he have to change all of this if he wants to?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg is the chief executive and chairman of Facebook, so yes, he has a lot of power. He's also a substantial shareholder. Zuckerberg comes from that sort of fine American tradition of backing the big entrepreneur, whether it's Elon Musk, Rupert Murdoch, Mark Zuckerberg. And for now, he will have investor support. You know, he founded Facebook, he invented it, basically. And that sort of reflects in the decision-making process at the company as well. Ultimately, Zuckerberg is the most powerful figure.
So if he doesn't want to do anything to change sort of bad system that is now in place, what kind of power do regulators have? You've sort of explained how Facebook's algorithm works, but it sounds pretty complex. So can anyone outside of the company have an oversight of it?
Well, in the UK, the online safety bill, which is going through a sort of scrutiny process at the moment in Westminster, it does have powers for Ofcom, the media and communications regulator, to go into companies and demand to see how their algorithms work. If that bill, which is a landmark bill, is copied around the world, then that's going to have an impact, obviously.
And what about in the US? I mean, what is Haugen actually fighting for? Like, what is her main mission at this point?
As Haugen has always stressed, she wants to save Facebook. She doesn't want to turn people against it in greater number. In terms of legislative change in the US, there's myriad attempts to change the landscape for Facebook and other social media companies, particularly with regard to Section 230, which is essentially seen as sort of founding text for social media companies and sort of relieves them of responsibility for their content, for what's published on their platforms. And one big overarching legal sort of maneuver going on at the moment is the Federal Trade Commission, which is a sort of US competition watchdog, has lodged a suit to try and break up Facebook.
Ah, so this is proposed as one of the solutions, is to break it up and to stop the monopoly it has. Yeah. How would that work?
So if the Federal Trade Commission succeeds in its suit, Facebook will be required to sell off WhatsApp and Instagram, essentially. So instead of being a sort of social media behemoth, it would be a series of social media behemoths. But the logic behind it would be that it would be easier for these smaller companies to moderate and concentrate on hate content and misinformation. Indeed, Charles Arthur, a journalist formerly of The Guardian, has suggested breaking Facebook, Instagram into smaller, legally discrete geographical entities that are individually better able to moderate and police their content because they don't have to worry about the entire world all the time. Facebook's response to that is that it takes a big beast to moderate a big beast. That it's only a company of Facebook's scale and financial resource that is able to moderate misinformation, hateful content on a global scale.
So Dan, finally, how vulnerable is Facebook to that kind of radical reaction now? How much trouble is Mark Zuckerberg in?
Facebook is certainly in a large amount of PR trouble in terms of the amount of appearances by Facebook executives in front of various lawmakers. We're going to see a lot of them. In terms of sort of regulatory actions against Facebook, I think you'll see action in the EU. You're obviously going to see the Online Safety Bill in the UK. You've got the Federal Trade Commission suit in the US. Facebook's lawyers are going to be very busy, but Facebook's got a lot of lawyers and it's got a lot of money. A sort of repeating aspect of the coverage over the past month is that Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg's strategy behind it is fundamentally about growth. The allegation is that this is growth at all costs, and indeed these documents obviously give quite some weight to that argument. What is going to happen now as a consequence of this is that people are going to be much more mindful of Mark Zuckerberg's determination to grow the company. It's going to be much more difficult for Mark Zuckerberg to grow his empire.
Dan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Dan Milmo. You can follow all his reporting on the hearings, including a story headlined Mark Zuckerberg Hits Back at Facebook Whistleblower Claims, which lays out the company's response to Haugen's evidence in full at theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.